And good afternoon, Muskegon. Don't touch that dial. You are watching or listening to Torn in Two for this April 29th, 2022. Hi, I'm your host, Gregory T. Roberts. It is nice day out there. It's mostly sunny, 60 degrees, and we have a very important show today. Just a couple things. If you would like to be involved in the show, I know the people you're driving. You just keep your hands on 10 and 2. But the people that would like to watch the show and have questions, you can do that by watching Facebook, WUVS 103.7 or M106. You can catch us on both sites. This, before I introduce our co-host and our guest for today, I need you to get some paper, and I need you to get a pen. Go ahead. I'll give you a second to do that, because the issue that we're talking about today, I know it's Friday and stuff like that, and some people just got paid, and you're feeling good and stuff, but this issue is way too important. And the title of today's show is called Suicidal Situations. And we're going to do a deal about the issue of suicide. But before we go into that, let me introduce the co-host of the show, Torn in Two, Pastor C. Melvin Burns. The twins, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing well, my brother. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well, man. We got a deep subject today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the show today. I'm really hoping people are listening. I hope they get their pen and pad and take some notes. I know it's going to be helpful to a lot of people.
What we need you to do is to share this. Each and every person out there has either dealt with the emotions of suicidal thoughts, or you know somebody that has dealt with suicide. It is the numbers are growing up, and it's something that we got to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I told you last week, I want to share, at some point I want to share a story with you, you know, a situation I kind of came in late on, but hopefully it'll get the attention of some people that are listening today.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's get into this show. Let's put this thing and let's get on the train tracks, if you will.
Yes, sir.
I am happy and delighted that these two individuals came on. When I was talking about issues on the show, and they said, we have to talk about suicide. The numbers are nuts. And I'm so happy that they decided to come on. So, as we say, put your hands together. Pass the plate, if you will. If you need to excuse yourself quickly, and get ready. Put your hand together for our guest, Mr. Jeff L. Walker. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
And of course, De'Erica Nichols Woods. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. First of all, I want to tell you guys before we go into the show, you guys have an open invitation to talk about this, because you guys know all the numbers and what's going on, and it is something that doesn't go away, and we in this community need to talk about suicide. Okay, so let's jump right into it. Why don't you guys introduce yourself, and we'll go into the topic.
All right, go ahead, Jeffrey.
No, you go ahead, ladies first.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is De'Erica Nichols Woods. I'm no stranger to the community, as much as I try to be. I am a certified QPR instructor here in the Muskegon area. And I also work with Kaya at Overcoming Barriers. That's our nonprofit organization. I am the director of program development. On top of that, I also have a production company, D-Region Production, where I write and produce faith-based plays. Do a little bit infomercials, you see, with the demo days and our Tidbit Tuesdays. But I am really near and dear getting back to doing the trainings for suicide prevention, I took it upon myself and Jeff to offer the training free to the community at least like every other month, because within the last couple of years, suicide ideations, attempts has gone up in African-American community. And as I have this motto, we need to talk about it, because it is affecting us tremendously. And so mm-hmm. it's going to take someone who has the training, the skill set, and the knowledge and the boldness to move forth and try to break those myths and stereotypes in African-American community. And it's time for us to talk about it, because our babies are hurting. Our men are hurting. Our families are hurting, you know, and we need to talk about it and tackle it. So I've taken it upon myself to make that a mission and a goal to start these trainings back up. So thank you for having me on my show. And I'll swing it over to my partner in crime, Jeff Walker.
Ms. Walker.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I'm Jeff Walker. I'm also a QPR, suicide prevention instructor. And I also work with Derica and Kaya with Overcoming Barriers. I am a care coordinator for one of our specialized adult foster care homes. I also, as we all have other projects, I'm the founder of a men's support group called Men of Recovery Evolving, and I'll elaborate more on that. 2019, I suffered a hemorrhagic stroke, and during recovery and all of those things, it was just placed in my spirit that I needed to provide or start a support group for men who have endured any type of trauma, whether it's health related, substance abuse, reentry into from incarceration. All of those things are traumatic, you know, and so that's what led me to start that project, in addition to everything else that I do along with Derica and Kaya.
Pastor Burns, you said you had a story. I want you to go in that story before we go into the question.
I want to encourage people that are hesitant to listen to this subject. Before I came back to Michigan, I used to be a big brother. And the young males in the program, and I brought him to Muskegon. But after I lost touch with him a couple of years later, went through some life things, I reached out to his mom. I was like, hey, how's he doing? And about 2 months before that, he had just committed suicide. He had ran into some rough spots, and we lost touch for a couple of years. Committed suicide in the driveway of his girlfriend, left a note. They got to arguments off and on over a year or so. And just life caught up with him, you know. And, you know, of course, his mom said, no, you didn't fail him, you know, but that'll still be with me that, you know, I wasn't there, you know, when he probably needed me to reach out. But we don't know, you know, I can say as a pastor, somebody has their life, we don't know who that person is that, you know, we're thinking about, maybe didn't call, but didn't reach out, you know, when those thoughts are there, those ideations are there. So, I really want to encourage people. I think you said, Derica, everybody, if they're honest about it, has somebody in their family, somebody they've touched who's dealt with this issue.
Right.
And the better equipped we are to recognize and to point people in the right direction, I hope that that's what we get out of the discussion today. So I'm going to be quiet. I want you guys to educate and inform us.
Okay, before we go, we have a comment already from Jack Page. Timely topic. I just started my inpatient stroke rehab today. Thanks for raising the awareness. Thank you, Jack. Get well. Okay, let's talk about the myths, the do's, the don'ts. You guys are here to educate us, and you guys have the floor. Let's talk about the program itself. And then let's talk about some of the knucklehead, stupid things that we say. I'm serious because, you know, T.D. Jakes said, you know, we go to people when they're, oh, we know how you feel, people on the funerals, he there in a better place. Sometimes I need you to just hold my hand and shut up. Just hold my hand and shut up. Don't talk to me. So let's talk about some of the do's, the don'ts of when you're dealing with a suicidal person.
Well, first of all, let's backtrack. So the QPR, which stands for question, persuade, refer, it's the training that has been around the last couple years. I got trained in 2015, and I believe as of right now, it has been maybe about 4,500 people that have been trained in the training. It I got when I was working through Health West, I was able to take the training, which is an 8-hour training. So it's kind of like a train the trainer. And so the training that I do is about an hour and a half, give or take. And so the training basically is kind of like taking first aid and CPR. It equips mm-hmm. you with the basics of what to look for, whether indirect clues, direct clues, behavior clues, and then how to ask a question. And then once you do that, persuade someone to go get help. And so it's a wonderful training. I know that schools have implemented with their staff. Hospitals have made it mandatory. They're giving their staff so many years for everyone to be trained. And so I've had the opportunity since 2015 to train between high school staff, organizations, churches. And so, like I said, I told my pastor that I believe that if pastors took the QPR training, it'll be a game changer in their ministry, because mm-hmm. although God does offer prayer does help, but at the same time there's resources out there for us, but we have this stigma. When I say us Black folks, mm-hmm. we have this stigma and this myth and this taboo that we don't talk about mental illness. What happens in the house stays in the house. We don't go talk to therapists because we're not crazy, and that's a white person's thing. And so these are stigmas and barriers that hinder us from having healthiness within our minds, healthiness and being whole physically. Like I tell people, if your physical capacity is just as detrimental as your mental, you know, if your mental is not right, then physical is not going to be right, and vice versa. And so there's so many do's and don'ts. The trainings that I've sat in, I've heard people call their loved ones dumb or stupid, which we probably heard that when somebody's saying that they're thinking about committing suicide or hurt themselves. You know, you hear, oh, that's stupid, that's dumb, that's just that devil, that's the spirit. And so these are things that you don't want to do, because you never know what a person's going through. And I tell people, how would you want someone to handle or to deal with you if you're in a crisis situation? It's kind of like that old saying, do unto others if you have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Walker.
Yeah, another thing we shouldn't say is, you know, make the person feel guilty for having that thought. Oh, you're going to do this, and you're selfish for wanting to do that. You know, putting extra guilt on someone who's already in a suicidal mindset is not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. I can echo everything Derek said, but she hit it right on the head. You know, and as I was saying with you earlier, you know, God has equipped men and women to be doctors and clinicians and psychiatrists, because yes, ultimately he is the great doctor, he's the great physician, but he needs extensions to everything that he does, and he has placed people in places to be that help in that time of need.
Mm-hmm. You talked about putting the guilt thing on people, like, you know what, that's stupid, and that's the most selfish thing that you can do. And I've actually heard people say that. How does that impact the person? Because what we don't know and what we don't deal with is that financially, most households is one crisis, like $400 away from a crisis. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mentally, we are one issue away from thoughts of maybe harming ourselves.
Yes.
Where do we start on this? I mean, where do we go?
The thing is allowing people to know that it's okay to talk about what they're going through. Mental illness is it's treatable, and suicide is preventable. If we start to make it more, we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable and having these tough discussions so that people can realize I have somebody that I can go and talk to, you know, and we have to be non-judgmental about right. that. Because again, as we all know someone who has been in that, you know, that had that thought, you know. We joke, you know, that, you know, there's 2 degrees of separation from knowing this person or that person. And we joke here, you know, that here in Muskegon, that degree of separation is only 2 people. So you can be open to talk to someone and they feel comfortable. We have to start breaking down those barriers so that people will be able to talk about what they're going through and not feel the shame and the embarrassment of, you know, like you said, I'm $400 away from a crisis. I can't pay my rent. I don't have any food. And you adding all of that stress and torment onto yourself when you can reach out to someone or someone will be open to have you speak and they can direct you to so that they may be able to help you. If you are closed mouth and tight lipped, you can't get anything if we don't know, if people don't know what you're dealing with.
Okay. Derica?
Yes, sir. Oh, goodness gracious.
I know. Wait a minute. I was like, wait a minute. Go back. We need to highlight that and pass the plate because he's throwing more. Yeah. He's dishing more nuggets than Steve Nash. Let's break that down a little further.
We all go through things in life, situations, things that are temporary, and that can be, you know, situation, divorce, sometime incarceration, employment, you know, having to relocate, you know, situations can cause people to just think the end of the world. But, you know, we live in a day and time to where I think since the pandemic in general, we've seen more bad than good, but and then vice versa depends upon every situation. But with that, we have to get to a point to where, as Jeff said, it's okay to not be okay. I think we need to start there because oftentimes there's so many people that's walking around that are just so heavy burden, but they feel like they don't have an outlet. And some outlets could be destructive things like alcohol, drugs, you know, risky behavior, sex, you know, so that's everybody's outlet, but there needs to be an outlet to where people can go to a place and say, hey, I'm having these thoughts. They should be able to go to people who they feel comfortable with, who are not going to judge them, who are not going to call them names or tell them that it's dumb, it's stupid, we don't do this, we don't do that. So like I said, when I say we have to talk about it, someone has to be bold enough to say, hey, I noticed that you're not okay today. I noticed X, Y, Z about you. You can tell me anything that you're going through. You know, be intentional about helping the next person. Be that safe space for people to where they feel comfortable to talk about it, to be able to talk about, you know, I'm having this problem, I'm having this health issue, I'm having these thoughts, or I have a loved one that may be going through. I get calls all the time about the mental illness, you know. And so with that, when you just listen, first of all, sometimes people don't want you to tell them what you need to do. They just need to need someone to vent to and listen. And then once you can decipher whether it's a crisis situation or, you know, they need counseling or just someone to vent, then you should be able to refer them to get help. But I think for the most part, let's just start with the basic thing while let's just talking in general. It's too many mouths that are being closed. And it's too many people that are ignoring individuals when they're in a crisis situation because sometimes we just don't want to be bothered or it's like, oh, that's not my problem. But suicide is a people problem. It's for everybody because we've all been affected by it. Whether it's suicidal ideations, the thoughts, someone who has attempted suicide or someone who's committed suicide. We're all interconnected in some sort, in some way.
Wow, let's go to comments. And I'm trying to read these as fast as Benita says, what a sorely needed discussion. We need it to normalize talking about mental health and concerns and how to identify those who may be in crisis. You never know how listening can literally save someone's lives.
Exactly. I agree with you. And when I do the training and I talk about when someone comes to you in a crisis situation, you know, our phones have consumed us. So first, when someone comes to you, if you don't have time to give them your undivided attention, let that person know ahead of time, because it could be that one thing to where you don't have time and you're rushing them to may set them off. So I tell people, when you have someone in crisis, give them your undivided attention. Put your phone away. Put it in the drawer. Watch how your body language, watch your tone. Watch all that. Sometimes it's just about just listening, the act of listening. Mm-hmm. You know, listen to what, because a lot of people listen. Are you hearing me what I'm telling you right now? And it's not about you. Well, if it was me, I'll do this. No, just listen to the person first. Listen, I'm a note taker. So what I do, I say, I'm listening to you, but I'm also taking notes because there might be some things that I may be able to pick up on, or when, if we have to go back into to have that conversation or think about that day, I can identify. But I let them know ahead of time, hey, I'm a note taker. I'm listening to you, but I'm taking notes. And it's just like, okay. But I tell people, let's start with when they come to you to talk, be ready to listen. And if you can't, let them know, but go find someone that does have that time to listen.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the comments. From William Kitchen says, talk the talk, very serious subject. Love what I'm hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Let me ask a question. So you say, and people only remember three or four things. So I'm listening. Tell me, what am I listening for? You know, people don't say, hey, I'm thinking of hurting myself, but tell me, what am I listening for?
I would say if someone is in crisis, listens for things of like direct clues. It could be indirect clues. Things like, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, harming myself, or I'm thinking about, I went down to the insurance company the other day to get insurance policy. Like, these are like indirect, direct clues. Things, if you know people, have a relationship with someone particular, if you recognize normal behaviors, things that your loved ones always do versus things that are just not normal, and then begin to like ask questions. If they're not necessarily telling you exactly, ask questions that may dig deeper. And I think, and that's where the training comes into, you know, like how to ask the questions. Okay. If you can't necessarily pick up on those clues, but just sometimes you just have to, hey, ask, are you thinking about harming yourself? You know, hey, what's going on with you? Have you thought about killing yourself? You know, you just have to kind of like get right in there.
Jeff, are you still with us?
Look like he's frozen.
And one of the most is that people think,
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, you froze. Why don't you re-enter the program and we'll get you back on. Okay. Okay. So, yeah, you talked about being an active listener and having the time, because if you don't have the time to when somebody, or you also talked about when looking around, knowing the room, if you see somebody that's very happy, normal, and all of a sudden you see them just downright depressed, talk about how important it is about approaching that person.
Well, I would say, first of all, think about your relationship. Is this somebody that you know personally, or you just kind of see on a whim? You have to be comfortable with yourself and then be comfortable in doing it. So I would say, for instance, if we had an individual that was coming to the cafe like 2 weeks in a row, coming in, dropping clues, 1 minute she's happy-go-lucky, and then the next she just kind of comes in and she's just real sad, and may say, you know, today's not a good day, or, you know, I thought about like leaving this world. Then it's like, hey, come here for a second. Let me talk to you. Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Pull them aside. And you never want to talk to someone in a big group or setting. You always want to pull them to the side to give them that, like, that privacy. And that's where because you don't want them to feel embarrassed. A lot of times we do feel embarrassed, especially if people know that you're connected to certain entities. They may feel embarrassed, or people may just assume. But you want to give them that privacy and just say, hey, you know, come here, let me talk to you for a minute. You kind of like have to be like their safe space. And like I said, it kind of just goes back to how would you want someone to deal with you in a crisis situation? It's pretty much how you should interact with someone in a crisis situation, you know.
I'm Pastor Melvin Burns.
Okay. And you touched on this a little bit in the beginning, and I know you're a very respectful person, but I want you to speak to my profession as a pastor. What would you say to pastors, you know, who I would say historically have not dealt with this issue well? Don't worry about offending me. Just look at me, and I want you to speak to all the pastors.
Wait, Melvin, let me add a little bit to that. Let me add just a little bit of theatrics to that. Yeah. It's just the devil.
That's that spirit.
It's just the spirit. You need the Lord. Yeah.
You know,
you don't have no mental problem.
Right. So when I actually took the training at MCC, it was like 36 people and 5 African Americans, and it was actually a couple of clergy in there. And they were saying that they wanted to take the training because they have had people in their congregation who's come to them talking about having suicidal ideations, and they just did not know how to handle it because it's they wanted to be more religious based, which is you could do that too, but they just didn't know how to just stop and listen to that individual. And so I would say, as a pastor, if you have someone that comes to you confidentially, hey, you know, pastor, I've been struggling with these thoughts. You know, it's just been really, I've been really burdened. I've been thinking about, you know, killing myself. It's kind of like, you know, listen to them first. And then always you can offer prayer in the end, but you don't want to like, you know, throw scriptures at them and make them feel, you know, bad, you know, like listen. And then if you have the training in QPR, then you'll know how to engage in that conversation, how to persuade them to live, and then how to refer them to get help.
Jeff, I want to talk about men, because we were told that men don't cry. You're not a sissy. Put some dirt on a kid. Get back in the game. I mean, just everything. And the thing is, we isolate ourselves because it's nobody's business. We can do it ourselves. Talk about men and this problem.
Well, that's one of the things is we as men, as you said, we're taught from an early age that we're not supposed to cry. We're not supposed to show emotion. And the only emotion that is acceptable for men to show is anger. And so we're not encouraged, and we're not taught to let those natural emotions flow. And as I was talking to you before the show started, Gregory, is that our bodies need to have that release of all of those stress. Crying is a stress reliever, you know, and Derek alluded to it earlier as well, that when your mental isn't working on all cylinders, your physical is not going to work on all cylinders either. Mm. So it is imperative that we change the narrative of men, boys, saying that you ain't supposed to cry. We are supposed to cry. We are emotional beings. We are emotional creatures. And crying and feeling sadness and feeling joy is just as much a part of us as being told to suck it up. And only time that we can show emotion is when we get angry. And then that poses another problem. That adds on stress. That adds on a lot of things that affects your body, affects yourself internally within your body. So we just have to start changing the narrative. I have two sons, and I grew up, I grew up without a father. That's traumatic, you know. So again, I tell people, since my stroke, I realize that I'm a poster person for trauma, you know. So as when my sons were coming up, you know, I didn't tell them, don't cry. You know, it's okay. They, you know, it's okay to cry. Once they saw, and it clicked with them, once they saw me cry, once they saw that I cried, it clicked. If dad can cry, it must be all right for us to cry. Mm. You know, and it's just, you know, you have to release those emotions and let them know that it's okay. Provide that safe space. And that's what we need to do as men. We need to start holding each other in that safe space and say, brother, hey, King, it's okay, man. You know, I'm here for you. I won't think less of you. And we all go through what we go through. You know, what you're going through may be different from what I'm going through, but I'm sure that pain hurts. My pain hurts just as much as yours when I'm going through my thing. So it's okay.
I'm just reminded of a story that when I was in the fire department in my beginning years, I wanted to protect my wife. So all the bad that I was seeing, so I was seeing neighbors kill themselves. I was seeing people die in fires and shootings and all that kind of stuff. And I thought I was protecting her, and I would come home and I'm quiet. And she would say, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. But in the meantime, all that was building in the inside. Finally, she broke it down and said, honey, you got to talk to me. Mm-hmm. De'Erica, how important is that communication base? Because we're all going through some kind of stress or whatever. How important is it to communicate?
Well, we know communication is important in anything. And so when I talk to people, from being a supervisor up until now, I tell people that in order to get your need met, you have to have honest conversation. Meaning, don't tell me what you think I want to hear. I need you to tell me what needs to be said so we could take care of that need. And I mean, like I said, any communication is important in any and everything. And when you know an individual, you know behaviors, you know habits, you know moods, you should be able to just to go to that person and ask those questions or just say, hey, like, what's going on, you know? And I think back to Jeff talking about emotions as a man. Everybody knows that my father is probably like the most emotional dude ever. But being a girl dad, I never looked at my father less of a man. If anything, I looked at him more manly because I think that that's awesome that he's able to be in tune with his emotions, and so are his sons. And I don't look at my brothers as being less of a man, but I look at them being more of a man. Because they're able to cry even when good. I've seen my dad cry joyful tears. I know my dad's joyful tears. I know his pain tears. I know his sad tears. So for me to be able to see that, it is good for me to have that because it just helps me as an adult to be in tune with my emotions so I could trickle it on down to my daughters. They can trickle it on down to their kids, and hopefully my grandkids could trickle it on down to their kids. So when they say men are not supposed to cry, if I had sons, I would say you're supposed to cry. I need you to cry.
We're at the bottom of the hour. It's 2:36. You're watching or listening to Torn the Two. We're talking about suicide today. Okay, so let's talk about the absolute don'ts that you do not do, that you do not do to someone that is in a particular state.
No name calling. That's like the worst thing that you can do, is to call someone dumb or stupid. Even to say that's a dumb idea, you don't want to do that, because you're making the situation even worse, and you're making it seem as if that person's life does not matter, which it does, and you're making it seem as if you don't care. And you have to take all signs of suicide seriously. I've heard people say, oh, you're just seeking attention. Sometimes it takes someone to say, I want to kill myself to get help or to get someone's attention. And that's just because they don't know how to go to that loved one or how to seek out help. Mm-hmm. So it takes something from that standpoint to occur for them to get the help that they need. And I've said in trainings to where I've had people afterwards that said that I did those two things on that, those two slides of indirect and direct quotes, my son or daughter said to me, and I told them that was dumb. Mm-hmm. And their child ended up committing suicide.
I want both of you to talk about how important, like you said, every attempt, everything said, if somebody says it, you take it's attention. Yeah, I mean, you don't ignore it. Well, the person says it all the time. Yeah, every suicidal thought that comes to you, you take.
You have to take it seriously.
I've had
and this was a couple of years ago, and Derek, I'm quite sure you remember. I had a family friend reach out to me. Because their son was dealing with suicidal ideation and wanted me to talk with her son. Mm-hmm. And Derek and I, you know, we set a meeting, had them come in, you know, and we just sat and we just listened to the young man. He had a lot of pressure on him. Was about to become a new dad, and a lot of pressure that he felt that he had to carry the family and all of those. And so we sat and we listened, and that's what, when Derek says that you have to actively and attentively listen to what they're going through, and then open up dialogue as needed. Derek, do you remember what I'm talking about?
I remember that. Yep.
And so from that standpoint, you know, we went through the process of, you know, talking, you know, asking, you know, we got the answers as to why, you know, we asked the question, you know, can you keep yourself safe for 24 hours? Do you want to get some help? You know, we can refer you. You know, and at the time, you know, he did not want to go talk to somebody again because of that stigma that I'm not telling my business to some outside person because you're gonna think I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. So he agreed, you know, that let me check on you. I'll check on you. Let me check on you weekly. I'll do a call in or we'll do a text. And I said, do you want to prefer calling or do you prefer text? And he was like, you know, I prefer text. So every week I said, well, I'm going to check on you every week. I said, I'm not going to give a certain day. I'm just going to check on you, see how you're doing. And I'm a safe space. So you let me know if things are good. You let me know if things are bad. If things are bad, let me know what I can do to help you. I'll be there. And
that went on, and we kept this communication up, you know, for about a year and a half. And then when, and I asked him that periodically, I shoot him a text. When I see his mom, I ask her, how he, oh, he's doing great. Thank you so much for what you and Derrica did. You know, he's in a different mindset, this, that, and other. So it's all about creating that safe space and being available and letting somebody be heard. And like Derrica said, if you ain't got time for somebody, let them know up front. Mm-hmm. Because the worst thing that you can do is be distracted when they're trying to let you know what's going on with them.
How about this? What is the face of suicide? Because people think that it's only certain people that have mental problems. But I know people, rich, poor, black and white, whatever. It, everybody has mental problems. Mm-hmm. So the stigma of suicide has a face is wrong.
Yeah, most definitely. That's one of those myths. You know, we all have suffered from depression in some capacity of our life, whether it's, even if it was just like a temporary thing, seasonal depression. A lot of people have seasonal depression, you know, postpartum depression. Those women that have had kids and, you know, find themselves slipping into depression. We've all have had some type of mental capacity sometime throughout our life. I mean, it's just one of those things that happens, but it's the what do we do about it? Are we talking about it? Are we getting help for it? Or are we just keeping it inside? And then with that, it festers more and more and gets more and more and more deep because we don't know how to go about getting help and reaching out to people. Like I said, we just don't talk about mental illness in African-American community, but it's affecting us more and more on a daily basis, you know. And with everything that's going around, you know, with the police brutality and, you know, the homicides within our city and, you know, the pandemic, you know, it's just a lot of that. And it's heavy, you know, it's heavy. It's heavy out here in this world.
Yeah, and unfortunately, in the 2 years that we've been going through this pandemic, unfortunately, suicide rates among Blacks have risen.
It's increased.
So it's very important that this is a very, like you say, this is a very timely subject. And this is the reason why Derrica and I do what we do with these trainings. And, you know, and we have one coming up in May as well. So it's free and it's open to the public. And just come and get this information so that you will know the telltale signs. And like some of those, and just going back, Pastor, when you was like asking, like, what are some of the cues? So some of the non direct cues are, oh, I'm tired of living. You know, everybody would be better off if I wasn't here. Things like that. So if you start and then if you start to see behaviors where, you know, a person who was not as religious or spiritual, all of a sudden take a turn to being heavily spiritual and religious or vice versa.
Yeah. Or be asking a question, if I kill myself, will I go to heaven? I know that question has come up a lot. And just wondering, so if someone shows like an interest or disinterest in religion all of a sudden, or someone that begins to read a lot about death, these are like behaviors and indicators that they could be in a crisis situation or having suicidal ideations.
Or even if they started giving away prized possessions and things of that nature, those are subtle things that we need to start looking at and be more aware of. And as far as the non-direct cues that Derrica mentioned earlier.
You talk about when you're successful at getting somebody to recognize they have a problem. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways you found you've been able to successfully get people to go from, yeah, I see I have a problem, to I realize I need some help now?
Let's turn that train on. Okay, so what do we know what the bad things are? Mm-hmm. What are the things that we should do?
So offer support to that individual and have resources available. Whether it's the the 1-800-273-TALK number, which is a suicide prevention hotline.
Say that again.
It's 1-800-273-TALK.
Okay.
And then there's also a crisis text line that you can talk. You text TALK to 741-741, and the lifeline and the text line are 24/7.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of like once you've gotten a person, you identify a crisis situation, you've asked a question, and they're willing to go get help. It's just a matter of having resources available, and that's something that we share in the training. Health West is going to always be accessible. Going to the ER if that person can't keep themselves safe and just feel that they need help ASAP, you can always go to the ER. They'll do an assessment on them, ask a whole bunch of questions, and then determine what's the next step for them. So it's kind of like having those resources available. And then I tell people I always make myself available for individuals to reach out to talk. And I've had success to where I've given numbers to therapists and people have actually called. I'm trying to persuade people to get help. And what I'm trying to do now is reach out to African-American therapists. That seems like another health disparity is that we want to get help, but we want to have people that look like us because we understand the culture. But even then, when I talk to the therapists that are minority based, I'm like, hey, do you have experience in suicidal ideation? Because when individuals come to you that may be of African consent, we want to make sure that there's no bias, but they're able to handle the individual as if that's the loved one, because that makes a big difference too. And how you handle someone will determine their receptibility of receiving help.
Let's go to the board. Benita, deterioration in one's personal appearance and or hygiene, extreme and weight loss gain can be an outward signal of crisis.
Yep, or even that is someone that may show an interest or disinterest in a hobby. Like, you know, say if you're just a diehard, you know, sports fan or whatever your interest may be, and all of a sudden you just kind of seem to not have an interest in your favorites, or you're like seem to be disconnected or withdrawn from family and friends. And like, these are like indicators of a crisis situation. Anything that's, like I said, is really much like not the norm. Appearance is huge. Not trying to give away too much of the training, but for those individuals that stockpile, who have a tendency of overstocking on their medications, could be an indication of them maybe attempting suicide. Those that may have guns in their homes, you want to make sure that the guns are locked up, have a gun safety lock on them, 103.7. I know that you guys have gun locks to give away. So like I said, you know, suicide is preventable. You just have to know what to look for and how to go about persuading someone to live, because that's pretty much the ultimate thing, is to persuade someone to live.
All right, Jeff and De'Erica, I want you to talk to the person. Now, I'm the person with mental health. I'm having those thoughts. What do I need to do? Let's start with you, De'Erica.
Well, first of all, are you able to keep yourself safe? And when I say that, within a 24-hour realm, do you think that you can keep yourself safe? Do you have any, do you have a plan? And plans, if someone has a plan, then that's an indication that within those 24 hours, there's a possibility that they could bring self-harm to themselves. So with that, I would say, if you tell me that you have a plan, I would try to persuade you to live. You know, find out the what behind it, like what has gotten you to this point in your life. You know, what are you feeling? Is it because you lost your job? Is it because of relationship? You know, kind of get down to like the what. And then once you tell me, and I would just try to persuade, to refer you to get some help, whether I go with you, call a loved one that I can call that can maybe go with you, or just stay with you until you're in a place to where you're no longer in that crisis situation. But everyone's situation is like different, though, too. I haven't had anyone that I've talked to that has committed suicide, but just getting them in a calming place to make them feel that they're not crazy. That's big right there. That's you never tell someone that is dumb and they're stupid. Because when I talk to them, it's just like, you know, they're like, wow, like you made me feel safe. You made me feel comfortable. Like I'm not crazy. I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. You know, this isn't the spirit. This isn't this. This isn't that. Like all those myths and things that and the taboos that keep people from talking about mental illness or suicide in general. So those would be like the key things to do for someone that's in a crisis situation.
How about you, Jeff?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I would ask a question: are you able to keep yourself safe? And if they aren't, I, you know, make myself available to, get them to the ER, or like Derek says, is there someone, a family member that I can call that can come sit with you or can be with you? And I'm going to stay on the line with you until we get a hold of somebody, you know, so that you can remain safe. Make that persuasion to, you know, go to the ER to get help, and just make myself available. You know, I'm here to listen. I'm here to talk. For me, it's all about being leaning into my empathy because I've been there. I've been there. I know what suicidal ideation feels like. I know what it looks like. I know what the triggers are. I know what making the attempt is. So I know how, you know, those things, I would relate to them on that aspect and let them know that, let me know what I can do to help you, because if I can make it through, I know that there's a way we can help you make it through.
All right, I got to go back to the board again. Benita, you're on it today. Do we have resource guides or easy links for community resources, hospitals for emergency referrals, and therapists?
Yeah, actually, if you go to your primary physician, doctor should have a list of referrals for therapists. HealthWest is another resource. The 411 number should be resourceful. You can just kind of call and see if there's like a list of therapists that are available. But I would say check with your primary care physician first to see if they can refer you to any therapist or counseling.
Yes, and they normally have like little cards available too, for all of those resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pastor Burns.
No, appreciate that. We seeing any effects, you guys, as well? We seeing any effects of the training? Have people come back to you and giving you any follow up once they've done the training?
Yeah, yes. I've had numerous success stories where someone was able to identify a child in crisis on social media and they reached out to the parent ASAP and was able to get their child some help. They had been bullied. I've also had people that's come to remind me that they remembered what to look for, and they were able to talk to someone to get help. So people that take the training have used it. And so when I do the training, I try to get it to where people can make a connection. I say, think about yourself, think about your spouse, your children, your brothers, your sisters, your nieces. So when you're able to have people to make a connection, the training is beneficial because it's like those aha moments, like, wow, like I told people, I said, I wish you could just see your face when I do some of these slides. Mm-hmm. So people could, it's those aha moments, like, dang it. Like I was talking to such and such and they said this to me, but I did know X, Y, Z. So I've had success behind the training. I've got some really good feedback to where it was beneficial from a professional standpoint to a personal standpoint. So if it's a room of 32 and I'm able to touch five people, I feel like I've done a good deed, you know, within that room. And that's the whole gist of doing the trainings. It's about saving lives.
Mm-hmm. Jeff?
Yeah, I've had individuals come back to me and let me know that and that they got much useful information, got techniques that they can use, that it was beneficial for them. I have had people come back to me and let me know that I was that person, and you know, now I know how I can help someone else. And so I've had a good number of people come back and let us know that, you know, they were very appreciative of the trainings that I've done with Derica and that I've done with other people as well. So, yeah.
Okay, I got to go to the board again. But he says, I mean, for the community, many people don't even have primary care doctors. We could perhaps put together a listing of minority therapists in the Muskegon and Grand Rapids area. And just before you go to that, Anthony Miller, hey, what's up, Tony? Says hello.
Hello.
What do we say to somebody that doesn't have a primary care doctor and suffer from mental?
I would tell them to go to the ER.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say go to the ER. That would be like the number one, because they will connect you, and it's like the ER, they can't ignore someone that's in a suicidal crisis.
Okay. Okay, we got 2 minutes. Let's talk about the class.
All right. So the QPR training is a certificate-based. I mean, when I say certificate, once you complete the training, you'll get a certificate. It looks good on a resume. And I guarantee that it'll be beneficial for any organization, whether you're working with youth, you work with people with disabilities. But it's just a great training to have underneath your belt. It's kind of like taking CPR first aid. It gives you the basic tools of what to look for. It's a free training that's going to take place May 17th at Mahaly Center on Peck Street from 6 to 8 p.m. We'll have some light snacks. It'll be very engaged. There's going to be some role playing, and it's just a great tool to have underneath your belt, especially in this day and time that we live in.
Yep. Now it's totally
and it's free. It's completely free.
Free 99.
Yep, free 99.
And here's the thing: this is something that everybody needs to do. Turn that TV off. This is something that can help not only you, but help your neighbor. We really need to get involved in this program. Sign me up. I'll be there.
All righty then.
All right.
Okay. So we have 1 minute left. I want you to know that you guys can come on anytime again, because it's a serious issue. Is there any reason why, other than COVID and some of the things, why the numbers have gone up of suicides?
I would say situations, a lot of situational, and then trauma, you know, between an African-American community, just between the police brutality that we've seen within our own community. Our young men are walking out here angry. It's just the situations, environment and situation, I would say, has which has caused our numbers to go up in African-American community.
Jeff. Yeah, I would echo the same thing. You know, just situationals, environment, trauma. You know, those will be the main things. Those will be the main things. And I'm just right now, I'm trying to keep it together, because with me being, it affects me personally, because I'm like Derek said, you know, we all know someone. Derica is
my capturer. She knows when I'm not in a good space. So our trauma based, situational, environmental, those things all have an effect.
All right. Listen, thank you guys. You have an open invitation to come back. We have run out of time. We will be having you back on the show.
Thank you
so much. We didn't even talk about your office space in the restaurant where I'm heading right now.
I'll see you there. That'll be a part two.
Yeah, that'll be a part. Maybe we'll go live on Facebook.
Thank you so much,
Jeff.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Pastor Reverend Burns, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Burns.
Go out and sow a seed in somebody's life. Water it. Yes. Take care and God bless. We see you next week.
Peace. Right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.